The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Today's interview is with Councillor Sarah Kirby-Young, and this interview is part of our series of interviewing our elected representatives about their priorities for 2021. In this interview, Sarah shares her thoughts on housing, on police presence in the downtown east side, and on finding homes for folks who are currently sleeping rough. Here's Sarah Kirby-Young. Councillor Sarah Kirby-Young, what a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sarah, it's been a big year in 2020, and we're going to have a bigger year to come in 21. And I want to ask you about what your top three priorities are for this year.
That is a great question, and I think a lot of people are thinking about that as we head into 2021. And obviously, it's not a normal year, so we are still in the midst of the pandemic. And so I think, you know, at a human level, just really hoping that we can see the vaccination program unrolling, and that gives people some sort of hope to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But specifically, with regards to City Council and what we're responsible for, there's a few priorities that I have. The first one is really focusing on the downtown east side. And I think looking at COVID, it really is a model and points out what can happen when you see such a coming together and an effort around declaring a public health emergency and putting all of the resources towards combating that. And I think that's the kind of effort that we need to see towards supporting people in the downtown east side and the increasing social and mental health and addictions and poverty issues that we see in Vancouver. So that really for me is, I think, one of my top priorities.
Do you have specific policy ideas or action steps attached to that?
Yeah, what I would like to see, I think when you look at what we have been doing, and you know the old adage, if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to get more of the same. And you say, okay, realistically, taking a step back, are we making progress? Is it getting better? And you look at the fact that our number of homeless people is not decreasing. The number of overdoses is not decreasing. We're getting better at intervening and saving lives, but our actual overdose attempts are up. And you also see that we have a growing, and so very concerning impact from mental health issues and challenges, and they're becoming much more prevalent. So when I look at that and the huge amount of effort and resources that are going to downtown Eastside, it causes me to say, are we approaching this the right way? So I would like to see a coming together of all levels of government to attack this challenge with the same sort of absolutely focused dedication that we have for COVID-19, and particularly bringing in the additional supports along the lines for mental health and addictions in addition to housing.
Thanks for that, Sarah. And I want to ask a little more about that, because it is a very common response for folks at a municipal level to say, we need the prov and the fed government at the table. And they clearly have more money than Vancouver City Council has. But other than waiting for the provincial government and federal government to get on board, what would you specifically like to see at the council table?
It is a common response. And I think that that's actually a good thing, because I think those voices need to be unified and united across party lines. And I think that the call needs to be consistent and it needs to be loud. I think Vancouver has made Herculean efforts, considering it's a municipal level of government above and beyond what people might have traditionally expected, and certainly have done heavy lifting as a city and also within the region, within Metro Vancouver, to deal with a lot of these issues. And you've seen sort of supporting City Council taking unanimous decision to support pursuing legalization or safe supply, for example, decriminalization of drugs. You've seen investment into social services in the downtown east side. But being realistic, we are triaging. We are simply trying to manage and respond to the situation. And we're also not equipped. We're not the health authority. We don't have the deep pockets, as you said, for housing. So I know that it's a common thing to hear, but it's true. And we really, I think, need to bring that line forward. It doesn't mean that we abdicate our responsibility, but it does mean that we can't do it by ourselves. What I would like to see, I think, is a more accelerated releasing of city-owned sites to support social housing. The City of Vancouver has become quite involved. They formed something called VAHA, or the Vancouver Affordable Housing Agency, and has become quite involved in working with nonprofits often, but also much more actively as a partner in development of those sites. And I actually think a lot of that expertise exists in the nonprofit industry. And one of the ways that the city could help expedite is to sort of get out of the way, trust the expertise of the nonprofits, make the sites available, perhaps do a mass RFP on those sites, because our staff try to do the best they can. And they do a lot of due diligence on each project, but it does take a lot of time in terms of getting those units into the market.
Thanks, Sarah. Let's talk about a little bit about something that's really been on the minds of folks in the neighborhood the last week, which is the shooting of Chester, a 37-year-old man, in the first week of January. And after that, there were many folks who renewed the call for saying, is the Vancouver Police Department the best responder for mental health crises in the neighborhood? And that's been followed by calls to relook at funding for the Vancouver Police Department. Can we get your opinion and your perspective on that, on police presence specifically in the downtown east side?
I think these people are falling through the cracks. And when you have a situation like that, you don't want to get to the point where you have a situation like that, because that is an individual that has not received the services or support they need. And that has put them in a vulnerable situation. So that was a really sad incident to hear about. And I think it touched a lot of people. And I do think that we need to move towards increased, as I sort of referenced earlier, mental health support services and addiction services. And there are a lot of individual challenges that have to be addressed thoughtfully, but we don't have them right now. And so it's a question of having, I think, some constructive conversations and bringing this conversation back to a middle ground, that because it's been quite divisive this year, and there's been a lot of emotion on both sides and a lot of public dialogue and discussion, but not enough, I think, getting into the specifics of what does a different model look like that complements traditional law and order and actually moves us towards that social service delivery. So I don't think it's as simple as take from sort of one service over here to provide to another. Who is the other? What does it look like? Who's going to deliver those services? What's the transition plan? What will success look like over time? So I think that this is the point where I would call on everybody to roll up their sleeves, dial down the rhetoric a little bit, and try to have some meaningful conversations around what that model could be.
For sure, because as many folks in the neighborhood say as well, that all folks in all different services, including the Vancouver Police Department, have tough jobs and often put their lives on the line. And there are organizations like Pivot Legal and VanDoo who have talked about different models of responding to crises. We spoke with VanDoo earlier this week, and they talked about, for example, training community folks in the community to respond to crises in downtown Eastside. Has that been something that you or other folks on council have looked at and thought about putting dollars towards?
I think there's an openness to look at it. Absolutely. I think that we have to be cognizant in terms of sort of the legal and the governance framework around this, that there is a provincial review that is happening right now as it relates to the Police Act and police services. And so I think that that is a key input into this conversation and this work in terms of defining that. There's also legal considerations around what can people respond to that constitutes a crime from a legal perspective? How are people protected if you were to have alternate services responding to certain types of calls? And what does that, you know, how does that work? If you look at things like some of the initiatives that they've had within the VPD that people are potentially suggesting could exist outside now, where you have a VPD officer paired with a Vancouver Coastal Health mental health worker, for example, oftentimes that mental health worker doesn't want to go alone. So should it be a partnered model? For example, should it exist inside or outside the VPD? How should that be supported? Does it need to be entirely independent? Those are all really good conversations to have. And that's where I think we have to realize that there's complexity to this, because you want to ensure that people get the help that they need, but you also don't want to unintentionally put other people in harm's way because you haven't got a well-articulated delivery mechanism.
Right? I want to ask you further about specifically the dollars, Sarah. Mm-hmm. And so city and the budget planning process for the new year is over, but it's still something that's on many people's minds. And so I want to ask specifically about the 1% decrease that city staff recommended to the VPD's budget.
I think in general, anytime you're going to change a model, you know, again, I go back to you need to have an alternate plan. And the plan hasn't been developed at this stage. So I don't think it's as simple as taking from one to give to something else, unless you know what is it that you are giving to and what does that delivery model look like. So, you know, I go back to that's where I think that work needs to happen.
Thanks, Sarah. I want to talk next about another big issue for folks in the neighborhood, which is the tent encampment in Strathcona. I'm sure it's been on your mind and on the mind of all the residents in Strathcona, both housed and unhoused. What's the next big step here?
Well, the next big step is assembling a sufficient amount of housing for people that are homeless, and also giving consideration to the fact that there are a lot of other homeless in the city as well, who equally have need and have been waiting for housing. So, you know, there's a lot of consideration and balancing to be given to that, but it is a responsibility if you're aiming to sort of move people out of the camp and respond to the feedback from the neighborhood and the issues that have happened there, and things like the loss of green space and livability, which is really important in the downtown east side. They have very little, but you have to have viable alternatives to move people to. And assembling that housing does take a period of time. And I know that's been very frustrating for some in terms of the amount of time. But that work is well underway. Personally, I'd like to see some more nimble alternatives that could be trialed or piloted, such as tiny homes. Council had some discussion around that. And there are some church or other faith-based organizations that are quite willing to partner with the city and look at doing a pilot program for something like that, which could be, it obviously doesn't replace sort of a more secure, higher quality housing environment for somebody, but it is potentially a mitigating step and a shorter term transitional measure to get somebody out of a wet, dark, cold situation in the park and into something that at least is insulated and provides a roof over their head.
Sarah, there are lots of folks in the neighborhood who say, one, our politicians don't get us and aren't moving fast enough, and two, we're not being engaged with enough in the neighborhood. What would you say to folks with that perspective?
I hear them. They write to us regularly. The neighborhood is doing a great job of ensuring their voice is being heard, and it is by City Council. There are, I'll be quite honest, there are differing points of view on this council. And while council voted to support additional measures around trying to develop new housing and incremental housing options and support, I think that there was some mischaracterization. So, for example, the mayor's motion that was billed as an extra and a new $30 million for housing was not new funding. That money was already in the budget. But it was positioned as, you know, $30 million towards tackling our homeless challenge or Strathcona. And I think we have to be really realistic that housing is expensive, so it wasn't new money. You look at when the provincial government bought a couple of hotels on Granville Street. One of them was purchased, for example, for $58 million. So $30 million, it is a lot of money in terms of taxpayer funds, but that equates to maybe half a hotel. If you're trying to buy and house people and you think of how many people you have homeless in the city as a whole, over 2,000, you know, maybe 150 to 200, it remains to be seen in Strathcona Park. So I think we have to be realistic, and there's also different opinions on council, and it wasn't a unanimous vote to move towards decamping the park either. And so the mayor, for example, does not support clearing up the park. He did support investing in new housing options, but didn't support clearing the park. So it's a challenge when the majority of your council to respond to the residents and neighborhoods is like, yes, our goal is to get people into solid housing. And yes, our goal is to return the park to the community. However, the mayor won't support that. He is the one that has those conversations with senior levels of government. And so you really need that individual to be driving forward on that.
Sarah, now that we've gotten discussion about relationships of council, I want to ask you a little more about that. And let's keep it at a sort of, many of our listeners don't follow lots of the he said, she said on Twitter. So we'll keep the conversation concrete on the ground. But I want to ask you about relationships on council. This council has a history or has a reputation of not getting many things done during its time. And recently there's been a little bit of division, it seems, on council and sort of a tension between folks on council. Do you see that to be true? And do you see, what steps would you like to see taken, if any, to improve relationships or collaboration between council members?
Well, what I would like to see is a shared respect and sentiment by all counselors, that everybody that was there won a seat at that table, and they are there because they wanted to contribute to sort of to working through issues for the city. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have different perspectives and opinions on it. But I think if we lose that fundamental respect for sort of the office, which is greater than any individual, in my opinion, or greater than any political affiliation, that's when things sometimes start to devolve. So I'd like to see that cordiality, if I can put it that way, returning to the council chambers. And I think there are some issues, you know, when you asked me right off the beginning what my priority was and really dealing with the issues that we have in the downtown east side, I think there are issues like that that council can come together on and we should come together on for the good of the city.
Sarah, the next big topic, housing. Everyone loves but needs to hear about this topic in Vancouver. What's the next big step here for housing in the city? And now let's talk about the city in general and keeping the lens on folks who are making a household income of less than 80, around 80K or less in this city. Every councillor in 2018 ran on making the city more affordable, but many Vancouverites would say they haven't seen that much of a difference in their lives. What's next?
Well, I think what's next is a review of things like our rental housing incentive programs. Those are the programs that really zero in and target that specific need demographic that you're talking about with a household income under 80,000. And so programs like, you know, we have all these acronyms like MERP, the Moderate Income Rental Housing Pilot Program, that provide waivers or incentives to the development community to encourage them to build rental, first of all, instead of building strata. And then to encourage them to provide a certain percentage of each building, 20% that is below market. Now, we've had discussions on council where we've had some councillors that have said, I won't vote for it because it's not enough social housing. And my argument is that it's 20% of these units is more than we had before. So it is progressive improvement, and it doesn't mean that some of these policies can't be improved. But that is how we get there. And so, for example, in the MERP program, where 20% of the units, when a new building is delivered like that, are come up and they're 20% below market rental rates. And people say, well, that's still expensive. But those also had had vacancy control tied to those units. So they'll also become progressively more affordable over time. And so it's continually saying, okay, with each project, can you thoughtfully continue to add to the stock in that need area? And I think that's what we need to do is approve the right type of housing, but it's not easy to do in an expensive market. And our policies aren't perfect and they can use some work, but I do think that it's important that we continue to pilot some of these programs to try to overcome some of the challenges.
Sarah, I hear your emphasis on the MERP program. And there are many folks in the city who say that that just isn't going to be fast enough for getting out of this housing crisis in the city. Not to say it's not a good step, but with each MERP program or each unit or development that is being developed under program, there's this huge council battle and so many speakers line up to speak. And just looking at the amount of time it takes to approve each project or disapprove of it, we're not moving very fast here. Are there other ways that we can move faster on this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's bringing in additional housing types and housing tenure types, so more moderate density across the city. So whether it's row homes, townhomes, looking at things like shared living opportunities, such as is happening in some European countries, where that's not something that we've explored as much in Vancouver here, but certainly could have some potential. Absolutely. And then also, I think expediting use of city land for social housing sites, because as you put people in certain tenure, it frees up some of the other housing types. So it's all sort of interconnected and works together.
Sarah, I want to ask you about capturing land value lift. We saw recently in the Joyce area, around the neighborhood where I grew up, it's very dear to my heart, where houses, properties are selling very older, smaller homes are selling for 3 to 4 times their assessed value because now they've been zoned for higher density than just single detached family home. Is there a way, what is the big idea here, if any, of capturing that land value lift, that increase in house prices for public use?
Well, I think that, you know, use the example of a single family home. And I think really the discussion that's starting to happen now around land lift really relates to large scale developments with density and specifically around transit sites, so frequent transit development areas. And that is the conversation that if there is a significant value created, and that's an if, because it does depend upon where it is, what type of housing is being delivered, what percent is rental or social, et cetera, in terms of a lift. But if something is being created, how do you fairly get some of that to support amenities and sort of livability in the neighborhoods? I know that Metro Vancouver is also doing some work on this. I think right now we're waiting for data because we actually don't have a lot of data on how that could and should work to the point that it would not be an impediment to building new housing, but it would actually support additional livability in a community. So I think right now there's a lot of discussion around how it might work, but I would really want to see some of those reports back around the numbers and the economics to see how it works.
So am I hearing wait for reports to come out and we'll decide later? Or what the second
thing? There's a lot of work doing it happening right now, and I think that a lot of people have grabbed onto the idea of the concept, but I don't think it's been articulated if it's going to deliver the results that we need. So no, I'm not proposing undue delays, but I'm saying that we need some informed information to make some good policy choices.
What sort of timeline do we have on that, Sarah?
Well, as I said, I know a lot of that work is underway right now. I think in the meantime, that's why we keep going on things like, you know, rental incentive programs and social housing programs, because you keep doing everything that you can in the short term, right? So that you're not putting your eggs on waiting for one report on another alternative.
Sarah, I've got about 2 minutes left with you, and I'd love to hear about what you'd like to achieve in the second half of your term as we approach the election next October.
I'd like to tackle, you know, as I said off the top, and I'll repeat it, sort of the significant issues that we're seeing, because we're not seeing homelessness decrease in Vancouver. We're not seeing overdose attempts decrease.
Thank you, Sarah. Could you give me specifics? It would be lovely to see homelessness decrease and the overdose crisis mitigated, but maybe specifics on what you'd like to see, something that, frankly speaking, folks can hold you accountable for come the next election.
Yeah, I'd like to see continued advocating for those discussions. And again, you know, I know that people don't want to hear it, but it is the way we have to do it, with the senior levels of government to put a task force in place to come forward that provides an integrated services treatment options. It's not just putting people into housing. That will work for some people. You know, we'll overcome some issues like poverty, but it won't work for other people that don't need the services. So I think that's where we need to focus.
Sarah, thank you so very much for your time today. And I know we all look forward to seeing your work as the next few months and year rolls out.
Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate you reaching out.
And that was Councillor Sarah Kirby-Young. She shared her priorities for 2021. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, your local morning news show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm May C. Tan, and as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Give me a shout. I'm at mayc@coopradio.org. That's meixi@coopradio.org. Ciao. Take care.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.